Welcome to our exploration into the source material. So today we are looking at Hernan Cortes and the primary letters he actually sent to the Spanish royals between 1519 and 1520. Specifically, we're diving into the first and second letters.
Right. So we have the first letter from Veracruz and then the second letter, which details the whole march to the heart of the Aztec Empire. And I mean, it's just wild to think about. Imagine arriving in a world so totally alien that you have to invent a completely new vocabulary for the animals, the architecture, and even the local politics.
Yeah, you literally have no words for what you're seeing. And the context behind this is just crucial, because in 1519, Cortes essentially committed an act of treason that, well, it really should have ended with a gallows.
Oh, absolutely. He was technically a mutineer, and he knew it. It's the ultimate high-stakes survival diary.
Right. Because originally he was sent on this very simple trading mission by the governor of Cuba, Diego Velazquez. But once he hit the coast, he realized trading just wasn't enough. So to save his own neck from a treason charge, he performs what we today would call like a corporate raid.
Yeah, a hostile takeover.
Exactly. He founds the city of Veracruz, not because he wanted to build houses or anything, but to create a legal startup. By setting up a city council, he could claim he was now reporting directly to the King of Spain, bypassing his old boss entirely.
It's a brilliant legal hack, honestly.
Yeah.
But, you know, a boardroom strategy only works if you can actually talk to the people on the ground. And that is where he finds his human Rosetta Stone, Geronimo de Aguilar.
Oh, right. The shipwrecked guy.
Yeah. Aguilar was a Spaniard who had been shipwrecked for 7 years, and he actually spoke the local Maya tongue. He basically became the key to the entire continent.
So Cortes has the legal cover, and now he has the language key. But when he meets the Tlaxcalans, the narrative usually says they helped the Spanish. Looking at the letters, though, it feels a lot more like the Tlaxcalans were just using him.
Oh, totally. Because Cortes describes them as enemies of Moctezuma, who, quote, ate no salt.
Right. Because of that massive blockade, no salt, no luxuries, they didn't see Cortes as this grand conqueror. They just saw him as a specialized, shiny new weapon they could point at their Aztec bullies.
Exactly. It makes you wonder if this was less of a Spanish invasion and more just the climax of a localized civil war.
Yeah.
The Spanish were just a tiny catalyst in this massive pre-existing explosion.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And then they finally reached Tenochtitlan, this incredible city on the water.
And it was an impossible city. It completely defied European logic. I mean, it was larger than Seville or Granada, built entirely on a lake, and 60,000 people were trading in the daily market.
Not to mention, it was connected by these massive removable bridges. And those bridges weren't just architecture, right? They were a security mechanism.
Yeah, if you control the bridges, the city is a fortress. But if you lose them,
it's a death trap.
Exactly. And the letters go into these eerie, exotic details. Moctezuma had private zoos containing eagles and lions, and even a house for white-haired monsters, which were actually albino humans.
And like 300 people just to look after his birds. It really paints a picture of a lord of the world. But here is what I don't get. If Moctezuma is this all-powerful god king, why didn't his people just revolt the second the Spanish put him under house guest slash arrest?
Well, think about the sovereignty paradox. It's like if a foreign power captured a modern president, but the staff just kept pretending everything was normal to avoid a total national panic.
Yeah.
Moctezuma was actively telling his people he was staying with the Spanish by choice.
Just to keep up the illusion. But that illusion of peace eventually hits a wall of cultural friction. Because when the Spanish saw the Aztec altars, they didn't see a different religion. They saw a literal crime scene.
Right. Cortes describes the horror of opening chests of living children to offer hearts to stone idols.
Mm.
And the Spanish response was just to start smashing the idols to install crosses.
Which is the exact moment the whole diplomatic game turns into an existential war.
The paradox snapped. And that friction directly led to the Noche Triste, or the Sad Night, where the Spanish had to flee the city. Moctezuma was killed. Cortes claims by a stone thrown by his own people, and the Spanish lost their gold and horses in the water.
Because they were weighed down by the loot. It's like everyone was playing a high-stakes game of leverage, like provincial taxation, and the Spanish just pushed it too far.
And they barely made it out. They regrouped in Tlaxcala to found Segura de la Frontera, but, you know, it just proves the conquest wasn't a clean line of victory. It was a messy, desperate scramble of legal loopholes.
Yeah, it really makes you rethink the whole narrative. Why it matters is that it shows how fragile these massive empires really were. So as you think about this, here is a final provocative thought.
Okay, let's hear it.
While Cortez describes Moctezuma insisting he was palpable flesh and bone just to prove he wasn't a god. If the Aztecs originally viewed the Spaniards as returning natural lords, at what specific moment did that mythology finally shatter for the locals? Was it the smashing of the idols or the arrest of the king? When did they look at the Spanish and realize they were just men who could bleed?